This is Sarah Grady from Glenwood.
Hi, this is Jen Smith from New York Cider Association. And you are listening to Cider Chat.
And you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode of 42. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Wincoller and I am your Cider MC. On this weekly podcast, chatting with cider makers and enthusiasts and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we are in New York State featuring the New York Cider Association and New York Cider Week. We'll be speaking with the executive director, Jennifer Smith, and the founder of New York's Cider Week, that is Sarah Grady, who works at an educational center just outside of the city called Glenwood. There'll be more on this chat in a moment. This is episode 42, which kind of makes my head spin a little bit when I think about how quickly the time went by when I first launched this podcast at the end of October 2015. And now I feel I'm so fully like hanging out in Ciderville. It's almost like I just don't want to leave because it's so much fun. I think you know what I'm saying, right? Oh boy. So just to give you the heads up, if you're new to the Cider Chat podcast, the first 10 minutes or so, we're just chatting, you and I. And then about 10 minutes in, then we go full on with the chat. And again, this week we are focusing on New York State. And before we get too far along here, I want to make sure that I say thank you to all the folks who recently liked the Cider Chat Facebook page. I know some of them are cider makers, so let me give a shout out to Michael Stoffer from Hardball Cider. That's in Pennsylvania near the Bangor, I think, like right maybe in Bangor, West Bangor, a region I'm familiar with because I used to go out there with my folks when I was a wee lass and visiting one of my dad's army buddies who owned a big old farm there. Yep. Wow, good memories there. Also, Archie Hayes. Archie, you're from Raleigh, North Carolina, so welcome. You know I really love North Carolina. Good people down there. Derek Plutkowski is from Canada. And with Derek, there might actually be a upcoming podcast talking about cider apples and pomology, so stay tuned for that. Now, also a hello to Sean Paizo and Barry Evans, and David Barrick, who is, I believe, a cider maker in the UK at the St. Ives Cidery. So welcome, David. And Jenny Dorsey. I've met Jenny. She's a co-owner at Palm Boots. That is an organization for women in the cider trade. There's also Ryan Strong and Alan Leto. There's another Ryan Nelson from Portland, Oregon, and Gregory Johnson, it says here, founder at Homebrew Detroit. Right on, Detroit, you go, brewing it up. Then Marissa Bodie from Kansas City, Missouri, and Keith Allen, it says he works at being self-employed and loving it. Right on, Keith. I imagine that involves quite a bit of cider. And Todd Strobel from the University of Wisconsin. And Pontus Lindstrett. That seems like a made-up name, and sometimes, you know, that's what we have to do on Facebook. So welcome, Pontus. And last but not least, Jimmy Carbone. Now, Jimmy, I met Jimmy for the first time kind of officially. I met him years ago because I've been writing about craft beer for, quite a long time. And he has Jimmy's number 43, and that is in the East Village in New York City. And he is also the founder and president of Food Karma Projects. Really awesome publican. And what I mean by that, that's a person who typically owns and moves along the scene at their restaurant or bar. And in this case, he has both. It's a very nice place, well worth a visit. And what Jimmy has is that unique talent of making each person that he's engaging with feel totally seen, totally heard, and like a million bucks. That is the epitome of being a publican. And he's moving and grooving. And he was the man behind this past weekend's Cider Feast in New York City. That took place at Solar One, and it was a really unique event because kind of like you can't get there from here. I mean, it was easy to get to, but it was in this kind of odd spot, and it's essentially right on the water next to this place where planes are taking off, and he has this ongoing event calendar. And this is the second year that the Cider Feast took place. So the ticket includes both the tasting and food that's being served, which was delicious, and a very intimate setting. And that's where I met up with both Jennifer Smith and Sarah Grady. I also got to see Daniel Von Schreiner, who is the cider maker at Big Apple Hard Cider. I spoke to Danielle. That was in episode 35. You should check that out. And saw Eli from the Urban Farm Affirmatory. So there'll be an upcoming chat with Eli. Just so many folks. And Jimmy was just walking around, really including everyone that he meets. I have a photo of he and I on the Facebook page at Cider Chat. Thanks, Jimmy, for all you did and for the work you do there. Jimmy does have a podcast called Beer Sessions, and that is on Heritage Radio. You might want to check that out. He does do some cider-focused chats there. Great man. All right, that's that. And the next thing I'd like to get into is we're going to first go down to Virginia and check in with Alex Steinmetz, who I spoke with in March. That is episode 23 at a new cidery in Richmond called Busky Cider. At that point, the cidery wasn't even open to the public. So we're going to be following the cidery along and seeing how they progress and keep going up and the success of that, some of the new additions along the way, just to give you a sense of what happens to a cidery. Do note that this was recorded in a really funkadelic way, where I was sitting in my car on a hot summer day yesterday, as a matter of fact, and holding up my recorder in my left hand and my cell phone in the other. I had Alex on speakerphone, and we started with the chat. I wouldn't be able to do that for too long, but for this little piece here, it was well worth it. So let's check out what's happening down in Richmond, Virginia at Busky Cider, again with Alex Steinmetz. Hello.
Hey, Rita.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm excited to hear what's happening down at your cidery.
Yeah, it's really progressed in the last few months. It's exciting. Got the can design all mocked up and going to be ordering the cans in the next few weeks here. So hopefully launching the cans before the fall. Tasting room's doing well, and we're in a few accounts in the Richmond area. So it's going really well. It's fun to actually have a product out and have people kind of come in and the reactions and conversations that really start or evolve around cider is kind of cool. So it's fun to see the gallon batches that I was doing a few months ago when we last built a couple thousand gallon batches now. So it's really exciting.
What are the size cans, and is this like a mobile canning scene?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're going to be in 12-ounce cans, six bags, and Old Dominion, Mike Horn, he opened up this mobile canning company, and he'll back up in our lower bay, and we'll can now probably a 60-barrel batch, and probably utilize that every, we're not sure, maybe once a month we'll get that done. We're still kind of working out the kinks there. This will be nice to get the product out there and generate some money that way, revenue, and eventually get a canning line of our own. We're looking at different filtration systems right now. I'm using a plate and frame, but we kind of want to scale up to cross-flow filter to make my life a lot easier. We're working with some unfiltered, unpasteurized juice that we get out in Nelson County up in the mountains, up in Shenandoah. So, and it comes in pretty hazy, so it eats through and a lot of those pads that we're using with the plate and frame. So it just kind of requires a lot more labor time. So the cross-flow would not only make our life easier or my life easier, but the percent of loss is, you know, astronomical. I think we're losing about, I'll have to go back and do the math, but I know with the cross flow, you're losing like 0.02%. So hardly anything. I mean, it's a very efficient system.
Now, going back to those cans, Alex, those are 12-ounce cans, and how are they being then packaged to the consumer? Are they coming in 6-packs or 4-packs?
Yeah, 6-packs, exactly,
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So you can pick it up in convenience stores and the grocery stores and at the ABC store here in Virginia. And the alcohol is regulated a little bit differently down here than probably other places of the country, I know. So, yeah, 6-pack of cans. And we'll do that for a while and then maybe go up to pint cans. But there hasn't been much talk about that. Right now we're just going to start with the 12-ounce cans, 6-packs, and get them out to the Richmond area.
How is the reception for the cider? Are you seeing any, I don't know, kind of epiphanies happening at the tasting room? Are folks coming in with a knowledge of cider, or is it really new to them?
The consumers, they're a little bit up to speed down here. Now, I don't know other places in the country, if they don't have as many cideries, that might be different. But yeah. Down here, they're pretty well-educated, and we run the Virginia Cider Makers Association is really up to speed. We hold Cider Week down here, and I think November it is. And so people are familiar with what cider can be. It's just it's not that accessible often, especially in pubs. You usually have one cider or one option on tap. It's hard to find two ciders on tap and really compare them. So people will come in, and they have kind of their staples that they're familiar with.
Well, there you have it. That's some great info from this new cidery startup in Richmond, Virginia. That's Busky Cider, and I was speaking with Alex Steinmetz, who is a cider maker there. And a couple things, just to kind of go over that quick, is that they are looking at changing over their filtration system. They're using a plate filtration and moving now to that cross-filter filtration, which will save them both time and cider, and also the goal of getting a canning line eventually. So each of these steps for a new startup cidery is critical on how you move forward. If you don't have a big bag of gold sitting for you to say, hey, yeah, man, we're just going to get our canning line up and pull in this or that, you got to really parcel that out and make good decisions. So we wish them the best, and we'll be continually following up along on this trail with Alex. Now let's head north of Virginia along the eastern continental shore of the United States into New York. Specifically, we're going to be in New York City. And this chat was pre-recorded while I was attending an event called Cider Feast. You could easily come into Grand Central Station and take the subway down and just walk across on what you would call 23rd Street and head east. And the East River, on one side, where we were, is Manhattan, and on the other side is Brooklyn and Queens. And it's a stunning vista. Do check out the photos that I posted in the Cider Chat Facebook page. I'm going to add a couple more photos once I get this podcast up and live to an album that I created called Cider Feast 2016. And on the other side of Manhattan, just to give you a little bit of the regional area there, is the Hudson River. And in the Hudson River, you would see the Statue of Liberty and Ellis Island. And opposite Manhattan is the New Jersey shoreline. And that's like Hoboken. Beautiful area. I like to send out a little plug if you're ever kind of heading south on the George Washington Bridge. Let me see if I could figure this out. It would be like the first exit that you take once you leave Manhattan and you go down along on River Drive. There's a wonderful Japanese grocery and deli area called Mitsuwa that I know of. I don't know if they sell cider there, but I'm just going to throw that out to you because I love stopping there when I was traveling up and down the coast. Easy to get in and out of, kind of get you out of like the rush mentality of the highway and all that. I'm digressing a little bit, but that is what New York is about in that area, New Jersey and the different boroughs of New York City itself. There's so much to share. And it's not like we haven't been to New York before. If you recall, let me see what episode that was. Episode 9, I spoke with Ryan Burke at Angry Orchard. That's a little bit out of the city. They have the Angry Orchard kind of innovation center. And it's not a difficult place to get to. It's a little north of the George Washington 91 interstate, you'd be up on 84, and it's just kind of a stone's throw off the highway. They have a new treehouse, I guess. There's a TV show called Tree Masters, and they had the folks do filming there, and they have this treehouse that I guess they do some tasting up there, so check that out. Make sure you call ahead, because I have heard it's not open every single day that the Innovation Center is open, but it should be. Ooh, really, really cool. Who doesn't love a treehouse? Brings out the kid in all of us, right? And then another person that we spoke to from New York State, which is a cider maker, and that is Danielle Von Schreiner. And that was episode 35. And she is a cider maker at Big Apple Hard Cider, which is New York City's cider. And that's pretty cool. So I'm talking about all these different New York sites and locations because this week we're chatting with Jennifer Smith, who is the executive director of the New York State Cider Association. She's going to give you a little bit of background on that. And then Sarah Grady, who is the founder of Cider Week in New York. And there's actually three different Cider Weeks. So again, we're going to define that a bit. And I want you to know that this recording took place outside at Solar Fest, the grounds of it, during the Cider Feast event. That's a lot, right? To take in. I know you're keeping up with me, though. Even if you have a cider in your hand, you could keep up with this. And there was a lot of activity. In fact, there was a moment where that sound got really loud because right, like I could have waved to the pilot easily, there was a biplane taking off on the East River. So that's just so New York. You got to get in the groove. Mm-hmm. So how about if you and I grab a glass and join this chat right now with Jen Smith, the executive director of the New York State Cider Association, and Sarah Grady, founder of New York Cider Week.
Jen, you are the executive director of the New York State Cider Association. When did you come on board?
The New York Cider Association has been fulminating for a couple of years and was incorporated last summer, in the summer of 2015. We had our first annual meeting in February of this year.
Cider, if you could be here. There's an ECOW going on. We're sitting here, the three of us in a chair. There's a biplane taking off, and there's a bottle of cider. We're going to give them a shout-out. It's still bone dry from Brooklyn Cider House. And, of course, the two gals from New York State grabbed some New York cider to be drinking. So
couldn't be anything different. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, so we had our annual meeting in February, our inaugural annual meeting, and I was sort of key in coalescing the membership around that meeting, and shortly thereafter, after we'd nominated a board, I was brought on board as the executive director.
Okay. And how many people are on the board?
We have a 9-member board.
Okay. And are those cider makers?
Primarily cider makers. We have a few of the cider makers who are also growers, and some for whom growing is the majority of their business, and some for whom cider making is the majority of their business. And we also have Sarah from Glenwood, who is representing, a sustainable agriculture angle and the placemaking angle.
Perfect. All right, Sarah, so you are from Cold Spring, New York, which is a little outside of the city, at this farm, which is an educational center. And I think of, like, Cold Spring, I know a little bit of biodynamic that's going on in that area. Are you connected at all to the biodynamic community?
Not directly, no. So Glenwood is an agricultural nonprofit with a mission to support farming in the Hudson Valley. We do that a number of different ways. We are on a property where we have a working farm that supports our farmer training program. So we have apprenticeships there. We're an organic operation, so we're producing vegetables and meat and eggs. We don't make cider there. But we have a number of projects that support networks of professionals, food and farming professionals in the region, to pursue goals or solve challenges that will help support the viability of agriculture in the Hudson Valley, and also increase the identity of the region as a food region. So our cider project started several years ago with the recognition that the Hudson Valley has historically been an apple region, and therefore cider would be would give apple growers a competitive advantage, either by growing specific cider apples or by making hard cider themselves.
Perfect, perfect. And you're involved with Cider Week specifically, is that true in New York State?
I created Cider Week in
New
York.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Why don't we get the date out there for 2016 if we can?
Yeah, it's October 21st to 30th. So we'll have a couple of events that first weekend, and Jimmy is going to do an event right here at Solar One, bringing together cider makers and various people grilling, much like we're having today. On October 23rd, we'll be having the second annual Lower East Cider Festival on Orchard Street Sunday afternoon. And then we're also going to do a sort of big tent cider revival event where we're going to bring together as many New York cider makers as we can for a consumer-facing event one evening during that week. And then there'll be other locations hosting a variety of dining events, classes, tastings, etc. throughout the week.
So those events are all taking place in New York City.
Correct.
And but as I know it, it also branches out of New York City, too. How far out and out, are we talking 2 hours outside of New York City, or...?
During Cider Week New York City, we do find that there are events on the other side of the Hudson River over in Jersey, and sometimes a smattering that are in Westchester County, maybe Dutchess County, but primarily it's the five boroughs. However, there's also Cider Week Hudson Valley, which occurs in June each year, and Cider Week Finger Lakes, which is also in October, a little earlier in the month. So, you know, as the crow flies, you've got, you know, about a four-hour drive up to the Finger Lakes region, but particularly for that event in October, if you want to make October your cider tourism and event month, there's a lot going on up there.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's just give a shout-out to Jimmy for talking about the man who really has this event going on here today. He started number 43 down in the East Village. That's Jimmy Carbone. Really, really amazing guy, and I know that everybody is so thrilled on all the support that he has for cider, because as I know him, you know, a couple years ago, it was like really beer, the craft beer scene. And now to have the support of locals in that way who are really integral to the city. And you mentioned Orchard Street, and that's where we know both Jen and Ben of Wassail and the Cider Bar in New York City. So that's a big event coming up in October.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the workings of an executive director for the New York Association? Is this something that you go up to Albany and you sit down with Andrew Cuomo, the governor, and you say, Andrew, first of all, just like we are, let's have a little bottle of cider.
Motorcycle rides with Andrew primarily. Oh. But we do have partners that are working in the government sector. Specifically, Empire State Development in New York State has been tremendously supportive of the craft beverage industry writ large, but specifically cider, in making it a less onerous process to become a licensed cider maker, in supporting tourism and marketing initiatives to promote the ciders that they're making, and also assistance with value-added capital grants to help cider makers build out their properties, whether it's expanding production or building a tasting room or diversifying their business model. So we're very grateful for the support that we've received from the state.
Now, is the state supporting you monetarily? Is this a membership-based organization? How is it set up?
It is a membership-based organization and a not-for-profit organization. And we our development is primarily split between the revenue generated from ticket sales for our events and grants that we receive. Historically, they've been Craft Act grants. That's a program, again, that Governor Cuomo instituted starting in 2013. And we've been very lucky to receive funding that's helped us, coalesce the membership and also stage some of our initial revenue-generating events.
Wow, great. And what do you see as the future for the association? What are the hopes here? Because this is a new burgeoning scene that you're part of.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we have some really terrific, dynamic partners, particularly in Cornell and Cornell Extension.
Sure.
So, finding ways to underline our mission and support research to make the work of growing cider apples more productive and efficient in New York State, as well as continuing with our consumer events and our relationships with bars, restaurants, retailers, etc., to create a demand for cider. And the first step of that is creating an understanding of what cider is.
How do you do that? How do you create an understanding? I mean, Sarah, you are also part of that too, in creating an understanding of cider. That's kind of like the big question of what is cider, because it's gone in all different directions, and people are just starting to get that, oh, there's options in cider, that it's not just one way. And coming from Glenwood and some of your work, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, just speaking to the experience that I've had, you know, going back again several years, the very kind of beginnings of Cider Week, we had a pretty deliberate strategy to work with professionals in the beverage trade and really to make them the ambassadors for cider. And I have found that that's really important. So that if you go to a bar or you go to a restaurant and there's cider on the menu and you ask about it, someone can speak to their personal experience around that and, you know, help you understand what that cider might be like or what cider is. And that was just, you know, that was a real gap in the early days of my experience with cider, and I really myself have only been familiar with cider for several years, so it's been a tremendous journey for me to learn about that, but to realize that there were so many people who, even in the retail and restaurant establishments, couldn't represent well the product that they either were selling or had the capability of selling, potential to sell, that was where we started. And winning over those people and kind of, you know, enlightening those influencers about cider proves to be a really important first step to kind of crack open cider as a category in the beverage industry. I mean, particularly here in New York, obviously, there's a lot of influence from here. So that speaks a little more to the process of the work. I mean, I still find that question can be hard to answer. It's so dynamic, you know.
Yes, it is.
And I've had really powerful experiences in other cultures, in France and in Spain, learning about cider. And I think that we are in a really, like, rapidly changing, rapidly growing moment here in the States. It makes it still actually quite hard to answer that question.
Right, because there's so many different cider styles in the States that haven't really been defined. How long has Cider Week been taking place in New York?
This is the sixth year.
Sixth annual.
We started in 2011. No, it's 2011.
2011, okay. And what have you seen in terms of a change there over that period of time? Now we're talking about a five-year.
Wow.
We're in 2016 now. Can I wet your whistle a little bit? Maybe you need a little bit more cider. Here, I'm going to pour Sarah a little bit of cider.
There's a lot of changes
to help her. You know, it's kind of a little bit of work. May I, Jen? Okay, there
you
go.
Thank you.
I mean, the sort of simplest thing I can say is that people now expect to have access to cider. And that was not the case when we started. You know, we did a lot of convincing and a lot of recruiting. To the venues to host events and to the beverage directors to put cider on their menus and on their shelves and you know, to acquaint themselves with ciders that they were not yet familiar with, and that was actually a lot of work. And now there's much more of an expectation, like the trade professionals have access to a special tasting that we do for beverage directors and for retail buyers. Take it for granted now that this is an annual event and that they will have the opportunity to come learn about whatever new releases the cider makers are offering. And so even just to observe that shift and the level of expectation that they have, to me, is very powerful, because it took a lot to, you know, to spark that. But maybe you can speak to the sort of public change in the public attitude.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly a... And everybody knows this, the stats about the growth of cider nationally. We're talking about, you know, 70-80% market growth. In New York City specifically, I think think that the shift since the inception of Cider Week to today has in part been tapping into the craft beer audience, which is something that initially, you know, it was the interest that we were seeing was from fine dining, wine retail, natural wine retail, etc. And I think that some of our most avid supporters for Cider Week specifically in the past couple of years have become some of the bars that bars and retail shops that focus primarily on beer. You know, that's a real shift, and that reflects a sort of greater penetration of cider into an audience that's looking for a beer analog. You know, we work to promote both styles of cider, both cider as a beer analog and cider as a fine wine analog. So it's great to see that market develop over the past few years, and we hope to continue to work both tracks, both the fine wine and the craft beer track.
So are you working in terms of the bars in the region, educating them? How does that happen? How do you, like, get that foot in the door? Because, you know, there's only so many taps available and so much cooler space that's available. So are you, Jen, are you going out there and kind of knocking on the doors and saying, hey,
there's some in-person evangelizing that goes on throughout the year. You know, there's some finding enthusiastic, like-minded proprietors that are open to trying new things. I would say, you know, as Sarah mentioned, the trade tasting that we do each year tends to be the real exertion of resources around familiarizing people with why they should want to put cider on tap, put cider in bottles in the cooler. So it is a year-long process, but the real effort is the trade tasting.
And is this a full-time position for you?
You know, it's de facto full-time because I wear a lot of different hats. I work as an event producer. I work as the AD of the Cider Association. So I spend pretty much all of my time working, my professional time working on cider projects.
And how did you get into cider yourself? Is this something that, well, you know, she's a brilliant woman, obviously. She's intelligent.
Clearly.
She enjoys her cider. But, you know, everybody kind of starts somewhere.
Right.
So I was wondering, did you actually... Oh, thank you. Sarah's so... I love New York.
We all
Here's
take
to New
care
York.
Of one
she
another.
Just raised my glass off the... Oh, see that guy or gal. She honking their horn. They need some cider.
They need a little quaff.
Keep calm. Have a drink cider.
I most recently have a background with Esther Wines and Spirits, which is a large wine and spirits retailer in the city that has an event space, which is how I developed a relationship with Sarah and Sabine, who was another one of the early founders of Cider Week. Relationship to cider stems from an awareness of West County as a product that was being made in Massachusetts, which is where I'm from. You know, cider as a standalone category. Farnham Hill as well. It just drinks that I was familiar with from the point at which I understood that beverages could enhance a culinary experience. You know, so I would say that both of those really helped me understand wine. I think a lot of people come to cider from wine or from beer. For me, cider was more familiar almost at the beginning than wine. And then, of course, working in wine and spirits, seeing cider in the larger context. Yeah, I'm sort of lost my train of thought, but
that was pretty good. I love it even more. No, because you know West County and Franklin County and the whole area certainly is kind of a mecca in that way for a lot of folks. And Sarah, you mentioned that you are more recently into cider, but you know what is your first touchstone with cider? And I couldn't misinterpret that.
So when I first became involved with Glenwood, which was around 2009-2010. I was coming out of a career change, actually, from media production, and really wanted to do something related to food and agriculture, and I was lucky enough to get involved with this organization that I felt had tremendous potential to do a lot of impactful and creative things, and one of the first projects that I was asked to produce there was very loosely defined when it was assigned to me, but it was to create an experience between a group of cider and Calvados producers in southeastern Normandy and a group of apple growers and cider makers and distillers in the Hudson Valley. And the proposal to collaborate with this group of French producers came from a wonderful woman named Colette Rossant, who had lived in both regions, in France and in New York, and saw the potential for cider production in the Hudson Valley region, and she proposed that we connect these two groups, which we did through a cultural exchange program. The French producers came and visited the Hudson Valley for a week, and then I took the Americans to France for a week. So in the course of asking the questions that one would have to ask to prove that an idea like that had legs, I got to know many of the established cider makers in the Northeast and kind of discovered some of the what I call the vanguard of cider making in the Hudson Valley. So I was able to kind of find my way to the apple growers and the new cider makers in the Hudson Valley at that time in 2010. There were only several. I mean, few to several. It was a small group. And they gave me a real education, you know. And then I just asked a lot of questions and tried to figure out, you know, if growers really felt like cider held promise for them. And if it did, why and how and what might they do and what might they do differently and what were their visions and what were their dreams? And so that was an exciting, you know, beginning for me, but also, you know, Cider Week actually grew out of that experience of the exchange, and then the New York Cider Association grew out of Cider Week. So, you know, there was just a lot of momentum gained from one project to the next. And of course, I received an education from Steve Wood.
Steve Wood of Farnham Hill, I assume.
Steve Wood of Farnham Hill Ciders in New Hampshire was one of the, obviously, one of the very important figures that I learned about when I first started kind of, you know, poking around and asking these questions about cider. And I had the opportunity to visit him very early on in my journey learning about cider, and he schooled me.
You're laughing. Now I've had Steve.
We're good friends now. We're good friends now. But he's been a wonderful mentor and friend to me. And I just, you know, I feel like it's important to mention not only his role in my trajectory through this work, but obviously his influence on the American cider.
Nice. Good. Well, we'll make sure that folks know about Cider Week in New York and the association and how to get a hold of yourself and you, Sarah, too. Is there any tips that you might have, any kind of little pearls of cosmic wisdom for folks who out in other regions of the world or even in the U.S. who are thinking about starting an association? Any, like, magical, I mean, you know, obviously we can't go from the full thread of that, but
I mean, this is really brass tacks stuff. Being open to a diversity of communication styles and being in touch with the fact that what seems an obvious and efficient channel of communication to you may not for your larger membership. Build time into your calendar, your life for the spontaneous and important educational conversation. And anticipate that opportunities, both for bringing together your cider makers and for showcasing your cider makers to the consumer or trade audience, that there will be unforeseen opportunities. So sort of anticipate the unanticipated there.
Perfect. Well said. Well said.
I would just add that, and again, this is purely from my personal experience with this work, but having a group that is engaged and willing to serve as a leadership, you know, council, committee, board, whatever, where there either are already existing strong relationships or where relationships need to be cultivated, that kind of role of facilitation and coordination is really important, so that it's not just one or two people steering the ship, that you really have, you know, representation from a community, and you have trust, and you have, you know, a lot of voices there. And that function of, you know, creating a group and creating that cohesion can take a lot of time and can take a lot of work. So in some regions, there are existing, you know, social relationships amongst producers that kind of naturally evolve in that way. New York State is very large, so it's taken us, I would say, a fair amount of time. It's taken a few years to form this organization because there have been repeated events and meetings, and it's really been, I think, a product of these other collaborations like Cider Week and other experiences. So all those things kind of, you know, fed into the culture of connection and leadership that we have now.
Perfect. Well said. Well, thank you both so much for taking time with us in this chat and informing us about New York. And the best of luck for the future growth of cider in this Big Apple and the rest of the Big Apple state of New York.
Such a great time chatting there with Jennifer and Sarah. Really nice women, and I also took some great photos, so you should check that out for this episode. Again, it is episode number 42, and that'll be getting posted up there, so just click on to ciderchat.com and you should be able to find it, no problem. And there's also the contact info for the New York Cider Association and for Cider Week, along with the other two events, Cider Week in the Finger Lakes and Cider Week Hudson Valley. I'm sure we'll be heading back to New York again. In the meantime, we'll be getting ready for the chat next week with Colin Davis. Colin Davis is with Shaxbury and is one of the founders of that cider company, which is based in Vermont. So there'll be more on that chat next week. And I am also getting ready for my upcoming trip to Normandy, France, to meet with Eric Bordelais. He was known as a very world-famous sommelier in a Parisian restaurant called La Page that is still there. You could go to that restaurant, of course, but you won't find him there because he is now making world-famous ciders in Normandy. And that's going to be an amazing chat. And each week that we meet in between, I want to give you some little tidbits about him and his ciders and also his Perrys. You know, one of the things I like about Eric Bordelais, when he signs his emails, it isn't cheers, it isn't, you know, pros. He writes ciderly with an S, because he doesn't actually spell cider that same way. So I'll talk more about exactly how he does that maybe next week. One of the things I wanted to share with you is that you are going to be in on that chat, and I'll be recording it, and maybe it'll be a part one, part two, I'm not sure. But I'm also going to be taking photos and doing some videotaping, of course, and there'll be some extra footage and I'm sure recording that I'm going to be specifically using for the patrons of Cider Chat. As I know, probably you are a patron listening right now and somebody who really knows the value of Cider Chat, getting these stories told directly by the cider makers themselves and all the other cider folks in the industry like Jennifer and Sarah Grady today who are on this episode. And via the Patreon page, you too can help support this chat and get the inside scoop and more both on Eric Bordelais and other things like transcripts from Neil Worley. All good stuff. So just Google Patreon and Cider Chat and it'll come right up, or go to ciderchat.com and you will find it. Now, make sure at the end of this episode you stay tuned for a couple words that Sarah Grady had about wassail and a couple words from Jennifer Smith that will be leaving and rolling out with this episode. This is Real in Color signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
I want to give a shout out to Wassail. I know we mentioned Wassail, but Wassail on Orchard Street in Manhattan. If you're in New York or you're visiting New York, it's the place to go to drink cider. And they've really been tremendously innovative and creative and wonderful leaders in demonstrating, you know, the qualities of cider. So.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you both.
And I'm going to say thank you for educating people about cider.
My pleasure.
Your, you know, the cider day's work to this.
Yay. Thank you so much.
Going up.